it was the first time I had ever heard that you could get a degree in winemaking. And I said, that's for me.
Robert Parker has established himself as a critical reviewer with an acute palate. I'm just wondering where that female is.
The wine industry is addicting. It draws you back.
To me, the romance is in the glass, and it's when you're done with the bottle.
And we would spend our summer afternoons swimming in the irrigation pond for 3 to 4 hours a day.
Even though it's tough work, nobody said it would ever be easy. You know, we do it as a family.
In the final analysis, somebody's going to pop the cork, and they're either going to like the wine or they're not going to like the wine.
Since I made Cabernet all my life at Beringer, I buy Cabernet, so should never let a winemaker own their own winery.
We were either going back to Switzerland to go to hotel school, or we were going to come to California. We had to get closer to the vineyard thing.
It's like when you go to one of those winemaker dinners where the winemaker doesn't quite get that not everyone is telling jokes about the acid level in the wine all night.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle and welcome to podcast number 96. This week, we feature Mary Rocha of Rocha Family Vineyards.
We originally met Mary Rocha of Rocha Family Vineyards at Premier Napa Valley earlier this year, and it was fascinating to see just how exceptional all her wines were. A very pleasant tasting experience. Rocha's tasting room is a refurbished, rare, one-story Victorian house at the southern end of Napa Valley, which is where this interview took place. We're here with Mary Rocha of Rocha Wines. How you doing?
Hello. I'm doing great. How about you?
Fabulous. It's been an incredible day. The weather has totally turned. We've got sunshine screaming outside. It's actually warm out, and it's been a beautiful day.
It's a gorgeous day.
And we're in this incredible house, which is going to be your tasting room, offices.
Yes, absolutely.
Anything beyond that?
We have a permit to build out a winery if we can at some point in the future, so who knows about that.
That'd be kind of interesting. So you would obviously it would be an independent building if you did do that.
Absolutely. It would be at the back of the property.
I'm looking at the outside of this house when we drove up, and there are a number of Victorians around this, but is this considered a Victorian or no?
We call it a Victorian, but it does have a different style. The roof, as you noticed, is really rather unique, and I love the roof.
Yeah.
But I think it's a Victorian, just a different style of Victorian.
There are different styles, and that's what's fascinating about that era and that kind of house, because they're not always real identifiable. That's
right.
Why it's fun to kind of search them out when you can find them.
Well, it's definitely not a San Francisco painted lady.
Definitely not.
Right.
And you were saying this was built in what year?
I don't know the exact year offhand, but I think it was like around 1865.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
By General Mariano Vallejo, who was Comandante General of California for the Mexican government. And he is the one who handed over the keys of California, essentially, to what would become the U.S. government.
Sure. A very major piece of history.
Yes.
Absolutely. And so you're in the process of renovating the house, and it looks great. I mean, it's got so much character to it. Are we officially in Napa here, or are we?
We are still officially in Napa, okay. Yes.
All right.
Yes, down at the southern end of the valley.
Okay. Well, I guess what we should do before we go any further is talk about the main subject here, and that would be wine.
Great idea.
We met at Premier, and I was, to be really frank, I was just blown away by your wines and just about all of them. It was kind of a great experience. You don't run into that all the time. So first off, I guess, tell me about what you're making.
Okay, first of all, thank you, and I'm so glad you loved our wines. We make a number of wines. They are all estate wines, which means that, as you know, we grow the grapes. We have two vineyards, one in the Coombsville Appellation and the other in the Yountville Appellation. Only reds. We do actually three different Cabernets. Two of them are vineyard designate, and the third is our Tesserina, and that is just the best of the best. And sometimes it could officially be a vineyard designate, but it doesn't have to be. And then we also make a small amount of Syrah, a very small amount of Merlot. We make a really wonderful blend called Vespera.
What is Vespera?
Thank you for asking. I love the name Vespera because I found it in a book, and it's a Latin word, and it means basically the time of day, just like about right now, where we come, you know, go from late afternoon into early evening. And I named the wine that because I thought it's the time of day when people are done with their work day. They get to sit down and relax like we're doing right now and enjoy some good food and wine with their friends and family.
Sure. And you almost have that time where the sun is a little bit glowing, isn't it? Where you get, it makes you relax a little bit.
Exactly.
It was nature's way, I guess, for that to be the end of our day.
Yes, absolutely.
All estate, and is there any plan at this point to try and grow anything around this spot, or is that not a possibility?
Actually, we are going to plant a very small little vineyard right in the back corner of the property, and we'll do, I believe we're going to be planting Chardonnay there so that we can have just probably a whole 10 or 15 cases of Chardonnay from this property.
Sure. Well, that's a good area for Chardonnay, obviously.
Yep.
And I guess it's fair to have a white in the crowd if you got to
right.
have one.
Right, I know. I've been wanting to have a white for a while, but I was discouraged by a couple of friends and mentors about doing that. But at some point, I want one.
These are anti-white people? Is that what it's all about, or what? I guess when you're a red person, you're a red person. That kind of makes sense, I guess.
Yes.
Let's talk about you. Where are you from originally, and what? Were you bit by the bug one day?
I grew up an hour from here. I was born in Berkeley, raised in Santa Rosa, and then out in the western part of Marin County.
Oh, cool.
Yes. So then I went off to college, off to graduate school in Boston, met my husband there. We went to Minnesota, and then I arm wrangled him into moving to California because he's from Tennessee.
So, wow, you've covered just about half the country. Well, more than half.
We've covered a lot of it, yeah.
How did you end up in Minnesota?
My husband's a physician, and he matched with the Mayo Clinic for his residency and training, which is an absolutely amazing place.
Yeah, I imagine maybe the weather after a while could have got you.
The weather is a little bit difficult, yes.
Yeah, when you're a native Californian, that's just like sort of being stuck in the freezer forever.
That's almost the truth, and if it's not frozen, then it's like really hot and humid. So
yeah, well, it's a beautiful area. I mean, for sure,
it's really pretty.
You know, St. Paul, yeah. Minneapolis is a great area,
but when you're raised in California, when you're a West Coast person, it's in your soul, and you can't stay away for too long.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, I think you're always called back somewhere along the line to where you're from, whether you listen or not. That's another story.
Right.
So. How did you end up
in the wine business?
Yes.
Well, I was a dentist before. My husband. We were both in graduate school in Boston. I was in dental school. He was in medical school, and we shared our classes together for the first year and a half. Mm-hmm. So I had a practice in Minnesota for a few years. Then we moved here. I had a practice here for 10 years, and it's really hard when you're an entrepreneur at heart and you're surrounded by people in a business that seems really exciting, an industry that just has all of these different things going on. It's hard to be here and not want to be part of it. And so my husband and I, we knew when we moved here that we would eventually want to have a vineyard. And then when we did buy our first vineyard, we just got caught up in the excitement of it and decided we should also make wine.
That makes good sense.
That's what happened. So we moved here in 89 and then started looking in the 90s for our first vineyard. And then we purchased our first vineyard in 1999. That's the Yountville vineyard, and which we call the Grigsby Vineyard now, named after my husband. He's Eric Grigsby.
Oh, nice.
So, yeah.
That's a nice treat.
Yeah, well,
to have a vineyard named after you.
As he says, my name is on the wine, though, so, yeah. And my four children, their names are all embossed, blind embossed on my wine labels.
Are they really?
So he was kind of whining for a while that everybody had their name on the bottle except for him.
I guess that's how it works out. But a vineyard, that's status.
That's substantial.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Exactly. We're not talking executive producer of film. We're talking, that's producer. That's kind of right up there.
It is up there. I'm going to tell him you said that.
Yeah. That'll make him feel good. Like he'll care, right? No. I got to go back. I never would have taken you for a dentist. Not that there is a model or a person, but that just kind of knocks my socks off.
I'm going to take that as a compliment.
Yeah, absolutely.
Nothing against my fellow previous colleagues out there, but I wasn't exactly the dentist type. But I had an amazingly great practice, and I worked really hard to give the best, most excellent care possible. I wanted my patients, if they saw another specialist, a dentist, mm-hmm. for that person to say, wow, who did this work? And they would. So,
were you general then, or?
I was a general dentist with a focus on cosmetic dentistry.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
So that's what I want to do with my wine, is have wine that people go, wow, who made this? Yeah. What is this? So.
Well, you scored with me in that regard. And I think that when you can get reactions out of people like that, I mean, that's got to be such a great satisfaction for you. It's, you know, no different, I imagine, with a patient who does well for you. If that makes sense.
Yeah, we are here to make people really happy when they have a glass of our wine.
Yeah, well, wine does make people happy. That's how that whole
Absolutely.
Thing works.
Absolutely,
yeah.
But I want them to be really happy that it's Rocca.
How many cases are you doing right now?
Close to 2,000.
Okay, so nice comfortable size, I call that.
And we're growing slowly but surely. We grew really slowly the first, 10, 12 years. And now that my kids are all out of the house, then it makes it a little bit easier to actually look at, maybe traveling to promote the wine and that sort of thing, which I just didn't want to do when my kids were young.
When you said you had four, right?
Four kids, still have them.
Yeah, that does make it really hard to be able to do the very typical road travel, which is required of this business in the end.
Right. Well, and that's why, I'll do some traveling. I have friends that are on the road, 15 days out of a month, and that's just not what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
So I'll grow to the extent that I can travel when I want to, but not have to just live on the road. Then I don't get to enjoy being in the Napa Valley.
Yeah, right. That's why you're here, isn't it?
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, you were talking about obviously doing a white. Do you think you're going to expand a bit to a little bit bigger? Is that part of your goal then?
Yeah, I would say my goal is to eventually be around 5,000 or 6,000 cases. That's still very small. That's still considered really small. Yeah.
So that's not a bad direction to go. Is it just kind of a matter of thinking about leases or maybe property you would end up wanting to buy?
Well, we actually have, we have the two estate vineyards. And if I, currently I sell more grapes than I keep
to a number
of other really fine wineries. They don't really want me to cut back on how much I sell to them, but, I will slowly cut back. And if I keep all of the grapes for myself, I could easily do 6,000 cases of estate fruit, estate wine. So, but I love selling grapes also. So there's a part of me that, a third vineyard might not be a bad thing.
No,
if I could somehow make that happen, got to win the lottery or something. But
yeah, right.
Then I could still make wine with my grapes, but still sell fruit also.
You're making wine and you live in Napa. I think you already won the lottery as far as that goes. Really, you are right. Yeah. Credit due, of course, to the one person we haven't mentioned so far, and that is your winemaker, who I also met as Premier, and your winemaker is?
Paul Colantuoni.
And I'm glad you said that name because I would have destroyed it.
We are a good Italian. I'm a Rocca. My grandpa came over from Italy. Paul's dad came over from Italy. He trained here in the Napa Valley. He trained in France and he trained in Italy.
So it's quite a pedigree.
Definitely. And he's a really smart guy. He was a chemical engineering major at Princeton. So
wow.
There you go.
Yeah, that's scary.
Till the light turned on and he realized he wanted to make wine.
I think there's a force in the universe doing this to people. It just, you're right, it's a switch, and all of a sudden it's like, no, I'm going this way.
See, if I were interviewing you, I'd find out how you ended up doing what you're doing.
I like wine, just like you.
See,
that's
there you
go.
That's
what it is. The switch got turned on. Yep. I think everybody has that. Everybody I've talked to that seems to be, unless they were born into the family somewhere along the line. And even then, how many times have you met winemakers' kids that run away and then come back, maybe?
Right, exactly.
Do you think any of your kids might be heading that direction?
I think they're too young to figure that out at this point in time. I have three that are still in college and one that's out, but I want them to go fly, do what they want to do first and get experience in whatever it may be and have success in something else. And then if they choose to come back to the wine business, they bring something to it.
Sure, sure. Just curious, anybody heading down the medical path at all at this point?
My son likes the idea of neurosciences kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my husband is a pain management physician, and he also does a lot of clinical research and neurological diseases and conditions.
And your husband have any direct involvement in the wine?
He was on a wine label at one point. We had a wine at one point called Bad Boy Red, and there was a great photo of him on the label that all the ladies loved, but yes. Other than that, he's on my board, and he's my, one of the tasters.
Oh, that's a good gig.
Yeah. Mm. So.
Well, I know there's plenty of volunteers in this room if you ever need anybody on your board for tasters.
Sounds good.
So why did the label go away? Because the ladies enjoyed it? I'm really curious. You set that up. You know that.
Yeah. Well, it may come back at some point, but then it probably won't be under the Roca umbrella. It was a really nice looking label, I think, and it had really great wine in it. It had our estate wine in it, but there were some distributors and accounts who thought that the price we asked for it was a little high for the fun quality of the label. The label was fun, so then the wine must not be serious, but it was great wine. So someday I may have a different project with that and take it off with that, but it would not be an estate wine and it wouldn't be a Roca wine at that point.
I see.
Yeah.
Sort of a shame, though, that you can't be fun and still have the appropriate price tag. I certainly think there are a few people that try that out there.
But yeah.
There is a weird perception, isn't it, sometime?
Very much so, yes. And people, when they're looking at wine on the shelves and that they have no idea about if a wine is good or not, nobody's standing there to help them. All they can do is look at the quality of the label and say, gosh, if they're not making a nicer label than that, then they're not paying attention to the wine they're making. So, a label does tell people something about the wine, or at least people think it does.
Right, right. You want to at least have something that's the hook.
Right.
That's going to get them to pick up the bottle and go from there.
Exactly. I think
that's always got to be the greatest challenge because, as I don't know if our listeners are aware of the fact that, of course, you have to go through approval process of the government. And from what I know, it's very, very stringent. So there's certain things you can do, certain things you can't do. No
very true.
Naked people dancing around or anything like that,
Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. Our government, they have to make sure.
Are you distributed, with such a small quantity, are you distributed anywhere at this point?
Oh, yeah, we are, definitely. You can always check. Well, we sell, of course, through our website. Other states, I think that on our website, it may say the states that we sell wine retail in. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure, to be truthful. We're trying to get that up on the website. But we sell California, Massachusetts, Minnesota, Texas. We're going into Florida.
That's not bad, though.
I'm forgetting they are.
But, you're reasonably well covered, too. That's good.
Pennsylvania.
Really? Boy, that's a tough state, too.
Not all the time. It's sort of like every now and then they pull some in. Yeah. Number of states.
And, of course, you have a wine club, correct?
And we have a great wine club.
Yes. Tell me a little bit about it.
We have two different wine clubs. One is your more standard wine club. They're both, generally speaking, 4 shipments a year, and you can choose the number of bottles per shipment. With our wine club, both of them, wine club members get invited to special events, or every now and then we'll do some sort of special offer or make available a library wine that other people don't have access to, that sort of thing. And then we also have a wine club called the Salute Wine Club, and Salute in Italian means like health. And with that wine club, because of the fact that I was a dentist and my husband's a physician, what it does, it's we say that it's a wine club for healthcare professionals, anybody in the healthcare industry, and we've let others in too. And that wine club is pretty much the same as the other, but we do one other special thing with that wine club, and that is my husband and I actually have a small family foundation where we do some medical philanthropic projects.
Nice.
We did some projects in Africa, for example. Mm-hmm. But we thought with the Salute Club, we would try and help people in their own communities in just a small, small way. But so if a Salute Club member once a year, they can call us up and request that we send a donation, a bottle or two of wine to like a silent auction for a fundraiser in their community.
Sure.
So if, somebody wants us to send wine and it goes in their name off to that auction, and then it gets auctioned off in a silent auction, raises some amount of money.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So, and that's our way of helping, promote healthcare in different communities And they're the communities that our wine club members are in.
That makes a lot of sense. It's a good little bit of promotion, but more importantly, who doesn't want to bid on a bottle of wine?
Absolutely. And you know, here in Napa Valley, every silent auction has wine. And some great wines, of course.
Oh, I can't even imagine.
Obviously. Yeah. But you know, a lot of other communities, they don't have that. And so it's a nice way for them to get some really nice wine and have it available.
Nice California wine.
Right. Yeah. Napa Valley wine.
Napa Valley wine, right, specifically. Yes. So you're going to be kind of excited about Coombsville now being an official AVA, too.
I am excited about that. It's been a long time coming, and it's a great, nice little... It's a different AVA from most of them. It's smaller, and the wineries there are uniformly very small and primarily all family-run wineries where the family is running the winery. It's not just family on the label, but it's family doing it.
For our listeners, if they ever get the chance to travel there, it's really a very, very different area, but there is some damn fine wine coming from there.
There is, definitely.
And it's nice to see that being recognized after all this time.
Right. Thank you.
We're
happy about it.
You were mentioning to me that there's a special way that you go about making your wines. Tell me a little bit about that.
Okay.
And you also mentioned your vineyard manager.
Right, okay. So our winemaking, our goal is, first of all, that we raise our grapes in such a way that they are, like, pretty darned amazing when we harvest them. And when they are, then we don't have to intervene and try and turn them into something they're not. We take a very, very minimalist approach. So just, you know, into the tank, whole berries and clusters and hand punch downs. We use natural yeast. So it's really, really, really common. Most wines are made by selecting a yeast that you know what it's going to do, how it's going to ferment, how hot the juice can get before the yeast dies off, all of those things, and to some extent a flavor profile. Mm. And in order to do that, you have to kill off all the yeast that comes in on the grapes, because there's all sorts of yeast that comes in on the grapes. And then you just have that one sort of mono clone of yeast doing its thing. Well, we don't do that. We like to use the natural yeast. And so there's hundreds, probably thousands of different types of yeast there. And they each go through their own cycle and often at different times. Mm. And some of them produce different kinds of aromas. And so you might, one goes through and you get this great aroma, and then another turns on and it does its thing, and all of a sudden something really funky comes out and you go, oh my gosh, what's happening? And then you just have patience because the next one kicks in and the next one kicks in, and each one is adding a different element to the wine. So you end up having a much more complex, interesting wine by going with a natural yeast. So I love that about our wine.
Nice.
It's scarier. You're not as sure what's going to happen, and that's why not everybody does it. So I take great pride in the fact that my winemaker likes to do it that way. Mm. The other thing is, I was mentioning our farming, and we bought our vineyard in 1999. The first 2 years, 3 years, 2 years, we used vineyard management companies, and there are a lot of great vineyard management companies. Having said that, none of them care about my grapes as much as I do.
Yeah.
And so in 2001, we hired our own vineyard manager, Sergio Melgosa. He has been farming for us and only for us ever since then. So those vineyards, each vine, those are like all his little babies. And we have more than 2,000 vines per acre. And he can walk through and say, oh, Mary, you know, see that vine right there? I thought that I was going to have to pull it out this spring. But look how good it looks now. It's doing great. It gets to stay.
Sure, he knows them.
You know, or he'll know right where we have to change the valves on the irrigation system to put more water to the vines, because he doesn't have to look at the infrared picture of what's going on. He knows it just by being there.
Sure.
Yeah. So he's awesome. And he lives on one of our vineyards, our Culineta vineyard in the Coombsville area. That's where he lives. Mm-hmm. And you know, we couldn't do it without him. Couldn't do any of this without a great team. And I'm really lucky to have a great team.
Great.
So
I'm glad you brought up the team, because that does make a difference. It's people who work with you, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. We, you know, I think of it as a we.
Sure.
Yeah.
That's what it should be.
It should be. Yeah. And yeah, I'm very, very, very grateful to my team and how skilled and wonderful they are.
For our listeners who would like to learn a little bit more about you and about Broca Wines, how would they do that online?
All they have to do is go to our website, which is www.rocawines.com. So that's R-O-C-C-A and then wines.com. So think Almond Roca, but two C's.
That's a good one. That's a good way to remember it.
Yes.
And obviously, you're in the finishing stages here of your tasting room, so people could come visit you. Is there a phone number you might like to leave so they can contact you?
Sure. Our number is 707-257-8467. So that actually spells 257 V-I-N-S. Vaughn.
Nice.
Yes. So people feel free to call. There are only three of us that work here. So I'm here, John is here, and Lauren is here. You'll get one of us.
That's great, because they can talk to the people that really matter rather than just somebody who picks up the phone.
Absolutely.
Terrific. Mary, it was been a real pleasure to get to know you a little bit. I really appreciate your hanging out for us tonight, and it's been a lot of fun chatting with you. Thanks
Thank
very
you,
much.
Ray. I think it's been fun, too. Now we can relax. It's Vespera time.
Yeah. Learn more about Mary Roca at rocawines.com.
Thanks for listening, and watch for our next program featuring Michael Zardo of 10 Acre Winery in Sonoma. Cheers.
Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Our intern is Steve Lance. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2013.